The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you.
Welcome, listener, to the Big Red Couch. Welcome to our Audient Ideas episode, Ghosts and Overdrive. This week we have a number of submissions via email, forums, and random filthy social media sites from listeners, which we actually have. Are you admitting to having multiple listeners these days? Have we actually burnt that out?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm kind of liking the idea that it's one person with a very good range of voices. That said, I'm not sure how to explain the Gutter Skypes episode or the episode with John and Charlie. That one, maybe they're a ventriloquist. I'm hazy on the details.
Indeed. It was all a dream.
Nice. If we podcasters have offended, just think of this and all is mended. Yes, nice. Like it. Let's go with that. It's very Shakespearean.
Awesome. We're yes. Cultured. We are.
Oh, we're bags of... I have got culture coming out of my ass. Wait. I may have invalidated my own point there. Hold that thought.
And just in case you'd forgotten, posting today, we have Craig.
Hello.
And Ben. And it's quiet out here on the Big Red Couch today. It's just the two of us. So we're going to fill in the space with ideas that we have been sent for various episodes that have already played.
Ghostwatch really captured people's attention for some reason.
Excellent. So we've got a number of those. Should we do the Ghostwatch ones first?
Should we mix them up a bit?
Cool. All right. Up first is a stalwart contributor, foreign correspondent Taz, who has submitted an idea for Ghostwatch. Taz writes, "Fun show." Thank you, Taz. "Funny thing about Ghostwatch is that I went off on a completely different tangent. Space Ghost is dead, murdered by one of his many enemies. In the vacuum left, space crime is rampant. Jan and Jace go to ground and use their skills and the resources of the ghost planet to recruit a team of space vigilantes to take the space ghost's place. The new team is called, dun-da-da, Ghostwatch. Their first mission? Find Space Ghost murderer and rescue the power bands from the hands of evil. I can see the team having to take on a whole rogues gallery of villains in order to find the clues. System? I would imagine that over-the-top space superhero action is required. I think an aspect-based system would be best for that, something like PDQ or Wushu Open. Evil plot twist? After all the major villains have been dispatched, it is revealed that Space Ghost's true killers are Jan and Jace, and they each have one of the power bands. Their sudden but inevitable trail wraps up the first season of the campaign."
So is this the time when I admit that I've not actually seen anything of Space Ghost Coast to Coast?
I've not seen a lot of it myself. But I get the impression it's a good old-fashioned Super Friends-era cartoon, initially, before it became slightly more complicated by being reinvented. But the notion of, yes, having a virtuous crime-fighting space hero murdered by his own sidekicks, who then go shopping for people to replace him. That's darkly humorous. I could go with that.
Indeed. And even without the evil plot twist, it does nicely get around how to do the Captain Planet and the Planeteers sorts of things as a game, because, well, Captain Planet is very powerful, the Planeteers aren't, and that can get really annoying in a game if things go wrong. So just taking Space Ghost completely out of the picture before the game starts, you don't have that in-game power imbalance thing.
And it's a good, compelling central piece of the plot, but the titular hero of the series, or the, you know, the prime mover in this sort of this area, is gone, dead, disappeared, whatever. And what you're trying to do is to at least find out what happened. The idea that you might replace them or succeed them, something like that's a good motivator for all sorts of shenanigans.
Indeed. I do like the evil plot twist. I'm not sure whether you do the evil plot twist as whether you let the players of those characters in on it. I'm trying to figure out, as I talk, how you could do it in such a way so that you as GM have decided that some of the players are going to be the ones who done it, and how you do that in such a way that the players themselves don't know they done it. I'm not sure exactly how to do it, but I'm imagining the circumstance where the players who done it figure out that they are the guilty party slightly before everybody else.
That sounds a bit like a Apocalypse Engine. You failed a roll, or your roll means that something really interesting just has transpired, and it transpired retroactively, kind of thing.
Ooh.
Because it would be in a situation, it would logically be in a situation where this was conceivable, why you were doing a thing, why you found out of something, and it would lead with a little bit of narrative expectation to this result. But, yeah, that'll hand out like traitor cards at the start of the game.
That would be entertaining.
Cool.
Yeah, the idea of the space-traveling, plucky, crime-fighting, do-goody, two-shoes people doesn't necessarily come up in games that often. I mean, I'm not sure it would work in Apocalypse World. It's kind of inherent in the title, really.
Not specifically Apocalypse World, maybe, but yeah.
I don't know, are they warm, fluffy versions of Apocalypse World?
Not specifically.
I will take that silence as a bad sign.
Not that I've spotted, I'm sure it could be done.
Kind of wish I knew a little bit more about Space Ghost, to be honest. Realistically, should have done a little bit more looking up on that one, I'm afraid.
What about the next one?
Okay. This one is also from Taz, serial contributor, Taz, for Overdrive Factor. If I heard it right, Taz writes, the next show is about Overdrive Factor. I can see that as a superhero game a la the Fantastic Four. Our scientific genius, PC or NPC, invents the Overdrive, an experimental FTL drive. The testing is flawless, and it's time for the first manned voyage. As fate would have it, strange alien energies are encountered on the maiden flight, and the ship crashes. In order to survive wherever they crashed, Earth or some alien planet, the crew will have to use their newly discovered powers. The kicker? Their powers only work in overdrive and are always cranked up to 11. Using them can create as much trouble as they solve. System. Psyrun would be a good choice for this game, as a flashback mechanic can be used to create the character's backstory. Perhaps their exposure to overspace, TM, has damaged, or even better yet, mixed up their memories. Since the system uses other kind of dice, going gonzo with powers is built right into the system.
Interesting. Yes.
This one I like. Yes, the bizarre crossover of the crashed experimental ship trope that I think came up in a lot of early space opera with Fantastic Four. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, Fantastic Four were always exposed to wacky radiation and got their abilities that way, but the Psyrun is an interesting game is that you solicit parts of your character's history and story from the other players. You know, you say, oh, I found this in my pocket, what does it mean? And the players will provide an explanation, and you go, oh, that's, you find out something new about your character when you do that. So that's pretty cool, especially with the notion that the characters may have been significantly scrambled during the process.
I am imagining the crew of the crashed ship trying to deal with the friendly and well-meaning locals of this strange alien planet and all going horribly wrong when somebody inadvertently fires up a power. Yeah, that would be kind of fun. I'm not sure whether you'd do it as kind of the planet of the week, depending on how you wanted to do it. You could do it as a, well, we work our way back home.
As a campaign structure, the idea of, you know, voyaging it back to Earth.
But without the really awful ending?
I actually haven't been exposed to the ending, but it's possibly because I heard about it from other people. So, the notion that they're cobbling together the spacecraft, attempting not to be scrambled further by the overdrive at its full capacity, and gaining superpowers, it could be pretty exciting. Even just holding out long enough to be rescued could be pretty John Carter of Mars, maybe.
Oh, good. I had completely forgotten about that. Yes. Because, I mean, just in the movie, they got an awful lot of mileage out of John Carter figuring out his super strength and everything.
So you could use it to launch a fantasy otherworld kind of thing on a distant planet.
Indeed. There is always the chance that our intrepid crew will decide that they will become the god emperors of Saturn, because these are, after all, role players. There are stereotypes involved here, and that is one of them.
Yes. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. It puts me in mind, and I'm not quite sure why, of I think it was Spaceship Zero.
I'm not familiar.
If I am remembering correctly, and if I'm not, I'll put a link in the show notes. It was an RPG that is... effectively, it is the RPG spin-off of a German science fiction television series that never happened.
Cool. So it's not even Raumspiel Orion.
No, it is not a Raumspiel Orion RPG. This is Raumspatrol Orion.
Raumspatrol, yes.
With the frogs.
Yes. It was the 60s, they didn't need to be subtle.
Which is lucky. Worked out nicely for them.
Well, what Raumspiel means, I probably shouldn't check.
Hmm. Space story?
Yeah, maybe.
Not sure.
Or space game. I don't know German.
Neither do I.
Cool.
If I'm remembering correctly, this was one where they effectively made an RPG of a non-existent TV show in which an experimental space drive is activated that has the effect of destroying the entire universe except for that ship and basically starting a new one.
Cool.
From memory, the Deepest of the Hillside Thickets did an album of songs that was supposed to be for the upcoming movie Spaceship Zero, or reboot of a movie that was never going to happen, of a show that never happened. Got a bit meta.
Yes, I like that kind of completely astroturfed backstory, though. That's quite amazing. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that one... It could just be familiarity, but that one grabs me a little bit more than the Ghostwatch one, just personally, because I think I would end... Yeah, the going gonzo with powers, I think this would end up as a comedic game even if it didn't start that way.
Depends what your feeling is about that, but yeah.
That's true.
I mean, the having unintended consequences could also be horrifically tragic if it was something that pointed in that direction, but yeah, you could have slapstick, that's definitely possible.
Depending on how Psyrun works, you can potentially have the circumstance where every time they activate this drive to try to get back, it makes the powers a little bit more powerful and it scrambles things just a little bit more. I don't know whether that would aid or hinder.
Psyrun isn't a campaign-orientated game, really.
So it's a one-off?
Yeah, you're telling a story about amnesiacs with superpowers being chased by whoever created them or whoever wants to stop them. So,
right.
It generally comes to a sort of climactic and catastrophic kind of outcome relatively quickly. It's a short and sweet game.
So, good for the con game market, as it were.
Yeah, it's good.
From the sound of it.
It's got a good pickup and acceleration to it.
Cool.
But yeah, that can be tweaked. Everything can be tweaked, even if it's not the most sensible idea ever.
Never stopped us before.
Indeed. All right. Well, thank you, Taz. Those are cool ideas.
Indeed. Do you want to take the next one? I mean, it's another Ghostwatch one, so I could take it to have a turn at the Ghostwatching, or...
Sure. Cool. Go for it.
All right. Ghostwatch idea from Will. Either a Supers game or a techno-spy thriller with powers. Each nation, or continent, or major city, however you want to do it, has a secret group who work to keep the area safe from external destructive forces. To achieve this, the team has been given a series of watches, each with its own function. Each country's team might be slightly different in their makeup. The bear watch turns its wearer into a humanoid bear, similar to your standard fantasy werebear. The techno watch gives the user a limited form of control over machines. The options are endless, really. Then there's the ghost watch. This is one of the more powerful watches, as it grants its wearer intangibility and invisibility on command. Almost impossible to stop, rigorous psychological testing goes into deciding who wears the ghost watch. And that testing never fails. Ever. Important people are dying, or missing, with nobody making demands or claiming responsibilities for the crime. A world leader, the Premier of Wordistan, behind several layers of human security and many layers of physical security, has been assassinated, as well as half a dozen highly trained special operatives left dead or dying. This includes the wearer of Wordistan's Lightning Watch, which allowed her to become a living lightning bolt. A broken water pipe seems to blame. The PCs, as members of their own watch team, are tasked with discovering which ghost is the culprit and stopping them.
Which sounds tricky.
It does. It may just be me, but especially with the ghost watch, I am definitely getting a One Ring kind of vibe off this.
Right, so it's a central sort of part of the whole premise, and possibly tapped into, like, the Ring of Shadows from Quake, where you get these whispering voices when you use it, things like that.
Yeah, that would be creepy.
Mm-mm. So either it's kind of it taps into something unpleasant and mind-warping. It's interesting. I would be interested in making sure people had a grounding in the world and the idea that the person who has the ghost watch is somebody trusted and is somebody who should be totally above this sort of thing. And suddenly this goes down? It's like, just having the PCs enter at this point seems a bit abrupt to me.
You'd want to shake down things normally for a couple of sessions before throwing that in?
Yeah, I think so. The idea that get people used to their own watch powers. I'm going to assume the members of a watch team have their own timepieces of supernatural boofiness and allow them to have their own deal and then play out this thing so you can have a bit of a emotional impact from other watch bearers being taken out.
Mm. Seems to be my day for media tie-ins, so I apologise in advance. It just sort of struck me the parallels between this, and it could be just the name, and the Night Watch, Day Watch series.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A bit of fun there.
Indeed. And also, there's a certain, like, I can sort of construct a certain link into the comic The Boys.
Go on.
Well, the following will constitute horrifying spoilers for anybody who has not finished that comic, which I'm hoping Ben has.
I'm not entirely sure. I've read deep into it. How far into it is actually...
The final resolution thereof.
Oh, I haven't actually read that far.
I will... Let's just edit that bit out then.
Okay.
Let's go with... Okay, if you have read to the end of The Boys, and you want to know what I'm thinking, just think about the circumstance of somebody who is wearing the Ghost Watch, who is doing all this evil crap, but maybe doesn't know it.
Hmm.
I think that's spoiler-free enough.
Fair enough.
It's a pretty solid ending for a comic.
Hmm. Cool. And it's a pretty horrible comic, so that's an achievement.
Well, yes. I mean, consider the source, but yes. Yeah. That one's... I would definitely want to do that as aiming more at the techno-spy thriller line of things.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I quite like the idea of the watch gives you powers, and so to a certain extent you don't... To a certain extent, once you've identified who the problem is, you can either try to attack the person, or you can try to attack the watch. You've got sort of multiple approaches there.
Hmm.
Which kind of appeals to me from a being able to approach a problem from multiple angles point of view.
Hmm. And having multiple different versions of the watch power set among your team will give you different things that you can do as well.
Indeed. Yes, the idea that if you can figure out what whoever this rogue ghost watch wielder is after, you can maybe try to set a trap. The trouble is, potentially, well, you might have a ghost watch wielder on your own team. So that's going to be a little bit interesting, isn't it?
Hmm. I think you were quite right with the One Ring kind of parallel, because it's, as Will describes it, this is like the ne plus ultra of the watch set. I mean, you can give the gorilla watch to anybody, you know, he's extremely strong, he becomes a gorilla and so forth, but you could train him eventually and take him out. He can't just disappear and then start screwing with everybody. It's the top tier, it's one of the most important things, it's the fact that that's gone rogue. Or, alternatively, it's the fact that it has appeared to have gone rogue, and that might be the problem. Somebody set up circumstances, the only possible way that these events could have occurred is if the Ghost Watch wearer has gone off the rails. But maybe they're being set up.
Nice.
Maybe that's a twist that you could put in there. At least the notion that this person has all this extra power, all these extra responsibilities, the psychological testing, and still appears to have bizarrely jumped tracks. There's something more going on here, clearly. Either this was set up a long time ago, or they are currently being set up.
Yes, either they're being framed, or somebody's gotten to them in a way to cause them to do this.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a ton of options there. That's kind of fun.
And a line of watch-powered superheroes is extremely toyetic. That can't be forgotten.
That is true. Yeah, you may want to get all over the merchandising rights for this thing.
Indeed.
Will does work in the industry, so that's a thing.
Excellent.
He probably knows some people.
The watch industry?
The RPG industry.
Oh.
Yeah, I think the time has come for an RPG with merchandising and toy rights.
Indeed.
And so it may as well be this one.
And seriously, smartwatches are coming in. This could be like a cresting wave. I mean, the sky is the limit.
That would be a killer app. The Go Invisible and Walk Through Walls app.
I was just kind of thinking, like, branding and, like, themed smartwatches, not actual superpowers.
Oh, awkward. Awkward.
All right.
I can think of a few meetings I've been in where the ability to hit something on my watch, vanish, and walk out through a wall would be really handy.
There are apps you could just get to dial you furiously and you can claim to be needed elsewhere.
That might be easier and be less in breach of the laws of physics as we know them.
Indeed. Not quite superpowers, still helpful.
Indeed.
All right. So moving right along.
Indeed. Do you want to take the next one?
Sure thing. We have a missive from Just Dave from the Thursday Gamers.
Of Montreal.
Unless your scheduling has changed, but we're not going to hold you to it. Might still be the Thursday Gamers, regardless of when you play. It's a crazy world. Hi, guys. I figured I might as well send you a pitch from my topic list. These were your suggestions, so yeah, that's justified.
Yeah. I think there's still a few of them circling around in there. We haven't drawn them all yet.
Indeed. The overdrive factor. Everyone is familiar with the urban legend of hysterical strength. The one with the soccer mom lifts a car off her child? Problematic calling it hysterical, but yep, we know what you're talking about. Well, in this game world, there are a couple of scientists that have discovered that hysterical strength and other amazing mental and physical feats performed by human beings is a genetic condition that's quite rare. These two scientists discovered that certain people can tap into these genes. They call it the overdrive factor. In discovering the gene, they have been able to activate the overdrive factor in test subjects. They both win a Nobel Prize with the discovery. Patient Zero, their first successful test subject, of course breaks out of their lab and goes on a superhuman rampage. He is still at large. Because of this, they've had a falling out. Both scientists want to use the research to better mankind as a result of the incident with Patient Zero. Scientist A goes to the government because she believes they can contain the experiment safely, and Scientist B sets up their own lab in the private sector because she sees the evil potential and doesn't trust the government to use an overdrive factor properly. So now we have the premise of giving a player character superhuman abilities and a choice of two campaign types. They can work for the government, or for Scientist B, or for Patient Zero. Either way, the eventual possibilities are wide-ranging. Add to all of it that Patient Zero is out there and possibly hooking up with a mad scientist and possibly creating a league of badass overdrive. Adventure ideas include, but are not limited to, searching for new recruits from urban legends and strange stories, stopping a league of badass overdriver agents from committing crimes, stopping other cores from abusing science. Just Dave would run the game with Fate Core. It allows for people with superhuman powers as well if you want to have players who want to play non-overdrivers. Any weird or strange legend about strange abilities humans have performed in the past can be inspiration for powers. Added to that, myth and folklore and supernatural can be rolled into this idea with the thinking that the supernatural was simply natural overdrivers shrouded in mystery. There you go, guys. Have a good one and keep up the good work on the podcast.
Thank you, Dave.
Yes. Good work. It's not evil at all. Our silence was very reassuring, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
Yep.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's pretty traditional focuses for superhero stories and campaigns. You know, the normal people becoming superhuman, the cause being something that's come suddenly into the world, rather than it being like a long-standing thing. The possibility of just random folks getting powers and then splitting off into factions, depending if they feel they're being persecuted or, you know, just wanting to make a buck out of it.
From a certain point of view, you've got the Professor X versus General Straker,
yeah,
from the X-Men, of non-government versus government. It's not a perfect matchup by any means.
Hmm.
Actually, it may be closer to Magneto Straker, but never mind.
Yeah, it depends how the players go. Definitely Magneto, otherwise. Yeah, it's a good way to cast the expression of superpowers in the world.
And would nicely, if you were doing this, I mean, I would want to do this as a campaign, quite frankly.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's where the idea would really start to shine as a campaign. But in the initial setup, that choice of the three options really does give you a solid direction for the game.
Yeah, yeah. What we're looking at here is a world setting. Definitely the circumstances of how powers are developed, how they get activated. Was it the Wildcats or Stormforce or something? There's a particular thing about some people having a superpower that could activate other superpowers, effectively.
Stormwatch,
that's right.
Stormwatch definitely had that, at least during the Warren Ellis era, and I'm assuming prior to that.
Yeah, and the idea that they'd go around identifying sane, stable people they could activate as allies rather than borderline nutjobs who would naturally become harder to handle.
And adversaries, yeah.
Mm. And yeah, like I say, this is a setting idea. And that actually ties in something I talked about earlier. Are we evil? Conundrum?
Mm.
We claim this is the thing about making role-playing games. This podcast is about making people want to play your role-playing games, because making role-playing games, the real things, is way more complicated than that.
I mean, by this you are talking about system.
Or a completed supplement for a world or something. So the idea that, you know, we know people who write these things for a living and so forth, so yeah.
There is that. Did you want to mention...
I did. I kind of just ran out of steam there, sorry.
Well, as a lead-in to the audience, the reason that this came up is that Ben has recently been listening to a podcast called...
The RPG Design Panelcast.
RPG Design Panelcast, which I'm hoping that Ben can give a pithy description of at the beep. Beep.
Oh, literally, RPG Design Panelcast is a selection of RPG convention panels with game designers, the actual game designers, yeah, from indie games and more established things, telling you how to do certain portions of game production and publishing, down to the fonts you choose, how you edit it, how you present it to printers.
What circle of hell you will end up on if you use Comic Sans or Papyrus, I think came up, you mentioned?
Yes, things like that. Little pitfalls of production, how to workshop and test games, how playtesting actually works, wide-ranging advice. What we do is we just lead you down the primrose path. We are giving you the confidence to start coming up with ideas, and everyone's got ideas. This stuff has people who actually turn them into the real thing. We just talk funny on the internet.
That is true.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a reflection I had recently and feel vaguely bad about.
Interesting. Is it just because of that sort of dichotomy between this is what we are doing, that's what they're doing?
Vaguely, yes. I mean, I suppose we have proved that a couple of numpties can make a podcast. Why can't you?
That is true. We are a couple of numpties, and we have made a podcast.
And thereby we must be inspirations. I think that's how it works.
It's a horrifying thought, but yes. Let's run with that and see whether it sticks. I suspect it won't.
Fair enough.
I mean, the trick is to never allow anybody else out there to discover just how easy it is to make a podcast, because then that will detract from our mystique.
Indeed, because...
We're editing this bit out, right? This isn't going to go out on the show, Ben?
I think we can manage to cut it back together to make it sound mysterious and somehow full of alarm.
Just put some static over the top, kind of, yeah, Silent Hill style. That'll work.
Indeed.
Yeah, I am really liking, I mean, the whole idea is cool. The thing I am really liking about it is the fact that you've got right up front in the setting these kind of the three doors of what sort of game you want. Because if you go through the government one, you end up with, depending on the tech level involved, you end up with Stormwatch or similar. The government-backed supers thing. If you go through a slightly different door, you can end up with, well, Magneto, effectively. There's probably better examples, but that's the one that's coming to mind at the current point. If you go with the League of Badass Overdrivers, and if you go through the Scientist B door, you end up within spitting distance of X-Men. And that's kind of interesting to me, that if you can get the players to decide up front, this is the door we want to go through, that really does tell you what they want from a game. Which I always have problems with as a GM, is just figuring out what the hell players actually want. And sometimes the players don't know.
Well, yeah, maybe giving them those, starting them off as regular people and getting them to pick. Hopefully all pick the same thing, it'll be a bit disastrous. But making sure you've got those options there. Actually, the corporate option would be interesting, because it'd be all too likely that, you know, people suddenly developing these unusual abilities would probably get approached by corporations even more quickly than the authorities. You know, maybe if they didn't immediately manifest as being extinction-level events, oh, this is weird, we don't understand how this works, but suddenly they're working for Apple or some other organizations, like, and they become corporate-branded superheroes.
Certainly from a specifically... US context, I can imagine that a corporation can move on something a hell of a lot faster simply by allocating some budget and the board making a decision. Whereas in the US system, presumably you would require, I don't know, something at the Senate level? If it was a governmental response, you would actually need a lot of wheels to turn.
Hard to say. There might be a bit of questions of oversight and so forth that make the response slower than usual. The motives may not be as pristine and clear as, ooh,
this make lots of money.
This will make lots of money. There may be a little bit of a stumbling block there. Or maybe, you know, the corporation was funding the research in the first place. Got a bit of an inside line on it. I don't think I've actually seen, apart from things like Mystery Men, Captain Amazing or something,
Yes, who just had branding everywhere.
He looked like an ASCAR driver.
Yes.
That's slightly cynical, but somehow very compelling vision of superhero in the modern world.
Yes, it is distressingly accurate, I think.
So yeah, no, it's apart from my equivocations about making people condemn themselves to a life of game design, yeah, I like the notion that there's a huge amount to, like I say, it taps into a lot of traditional questions about superhero origins and how they are approached by society, but in a new way, or in some way I've certainly not encountered before. But it is a setting. That's a lot of information, a lot of structure to give you a game. So yeah, that's pretty impressive.
One final thought on it was, I have been thinking of it as effectively the choice, selecting your game by the choice of three chests, as it were, if I'm going to riff on The Merchant of Venice for some reason. Not entirely sure why that happened. Let's just run with it and pretend it didn't.
We're being Shakespearean this time, apparently.
We're being Shakespearean. I've got no idea. I've given up at this point.
Hamlet in overdrive. It's got ghosts in it? No.
That is true. Ghosts and indecision.
Yeah, that's pretty much the whole thing.
And Danny DeVito.
What?
the movie Army Intelligence. Danny DeVito comedy. In which he ends up teaching Hamlet to a group of army recruits who don't have the required minimum educational standard.
Ah, okay.
And it's very much a case of somebody who's never taught before being shoved into a classroom with almost no resources and no idea what he's supposed to be teaching these guys and no curriculum to work to. And so he ends up talking to them about the book he's currently reading, which is Hamlet, and the thing kind of snowballs from there.
Cool.
It's an interesting film. Out now. Comedy, interesting film.
Groovy.
Yeah, but yes, I was thinking you've got the three doors approach that I was talking about. I was just thinking of, if you assume that these events occurred a while ago, that split, as it were, has occurred, I'm wondering whether you could stitch together a game where you've got people who have chosen different doors. I'm not 100% sure, I'm in fact closer to 0% sure, how you'd do it, but if you had, using a system like Fate Core, where you've got aspects and there's a certain amount of metagame inherent in playing the game, you've got that metagame layer, whether you can have a game that is kind of about the uneasy friendship and collaboration between a member of the League of Badass Overdrivers and a couple of members of the corporate / scientific overdrive community and a member of a government squad. They all presumably have goals in common, but also goals in opposition. I mean, this is wild spitballing at this point.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds interesting. It kind of begs the setting to be relatively established. I mean,
yeah.
And part of the fun of this one is you could be actually building, especially using Fate Core, you could be building the setting with the players and developing the scenario as the factions stand and making characters there. But yeah, if once you've moved into, you know, cementing where these factions are, then mashing them back together again as you know, people coming from each of these different directions would be extremely interesting.
Having people reaching across the lines for specific purpose. Shades of the movie Red in that one. That there are at least some characters in there whose motivations overall are not entirely clear, but locally they're trustworthy.
They've got a job, a worthwhile job to do right now. See them next week and they might kill you.
Indeed.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that was a pretty cool one. Shall I take the next one?
Sure.
All right. This one comes from a new contributor, as far as I can remember, from the Fear the Boot forums, going by the name of Burning. So, hello, Burning. It's again for Ghostwatch. And it reads, for Ghostwatch, my mind first went to the task of standing watch. Clearly, the Ghostwatch is the watch period in the middle of the night when the ghosts are most likely to be about. So now I've got notions of Horatio Hornblower having to deal with the summonings of the best necromancers of the French fleet. I'm not really sure how to turn that into anything more concrete, though.
It's compelling. That's an interesting...
Evocative as hell. I'm getting flashes of the Master and Commander movie. I think there was only one.
Mm.
The Russell Crowe, Paul Bettany.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the one.
Yep.
And there were a few scenes of that were done in a very spooky, where despite the fact that it's this big ship with a huge number of crew, you've only got a couple of people on deck.
Mm.
And it's sort of in the dark times of the night and the plot, as it were.
Hmm. There can be things coming out of the mist that aren't entirely made of mist.
Indeed. And it would be a fun way of doing an alternative history.
Hmm, definitely.
Because if you're reaching back to that era, the era of bloody great wooden bathtubs ploughing their way through the waves, then you can start to reach back to some of the ideas about science and natural philosophy and magic and that kind of thing.
Ah, yes. I remember the BBC did a thing about discovery of longitude. You're a map. Mm. You're a map guy. You can correct me on this. And they needed an accurate timekeeping system, a watch, clock more precisely, so they can actually calculate where you are. Which one is longitude? Is it
latitude? The lines run flat, so it's effectively how up and down mm-hmm. on the globe you are. Longitude is how far around.
So east, west.
Latitude you can get from looking at
the stars.
The stars.
Yep.
You can sort of get, you can figure out the angle. Longitude.
Yeah, you need to know what time of day it is so you can do the calculation of how far around the globe you are when the sun comes up.
Yeah. I mean, ideally you need to know what time of day it is in a specific point
mm.
because, yeah, the obvious one is at the meridian of Greenwich.
Yep, which is why we have GMT.
Indeed, because then if you know when it's midday in Greenwich, you can measure the angle of the sun from the horizon and you can figure out, okay, if the sun is there and we know it's directly above in Greenwich, that means we must be this far around.
Yes, and the scene that I'm specifically reminded of is Stephen Fry as some sort of ghastly apothecarist or something. The powder of sympathy, this is this thing that he's presenting, that what you'd do is that you would have a dog that you would, I think it was like having like twin dogs, and you would stab them with a knife with a powder of sympathy on it, so the dogs on the ships would howl at the same time.
Yep.
It was like basically GPS, but with dogs.
Indeed.
And him playing this quite bizarre alchemist character was fairly memorable.
And that one was seriously presented to the Admiralty as a solution.
Yeah, that kind of alternate history where that kind of thing, that sort of thing kind of works would be really messed up. But definitely for somebody who's a tall ship enthusiast and liked that era and thought, you know, it could be more crazy, I think you could get a lot of mileage out of that.
We could sell this one to Gulo T in a second.
Yep, I was thinking that too.
No question, I fully expect to get a text from Gulo T any minute now wanting to be in this game. Just through the power of contagion and sympathy.
Yes, it is what drives our lives in this bright, alchemy-driven age.
Indeed. When last year I went to the Worldcon in London, and because I had some time to kill in London, I went to the Greenwich Observatory. Because as Ben has mentioned, I'm a map guy, so I did that. And they had an exhibition on longitude, which was very, very interesting, if you're me.
Rest of you was probably just lines on a map. Ah, well.
Yeah. Well, they had some of the clocks, because, you know, the trick wasn't inventing a clock. Clocks had been invented. The trick was inventing a clock that could keep time accurately enough when it's on a boat and being thrown around.
Yes. Timekeeping is fundamental to GPS as well. If it didn't work, you couldn't figure out where you were because it's the relative locations of the satellites that keep you in place. So
indeed. And you can get in GPS if you, for example, are using your GPS unit, you know, in urban environments, if you do it right, you can get this where the signal bounces off a building and gets to the receiver. And if you've not got a lot of satellites in view anyway, so you're kind of at that minimum number of satellites range, the receiver thinks that the signal has taken longer to get to you than it actually did, because it's taken a more roundabout route, And so consequently thinks you're in the wrong place.
Possibly inside a building.
Possibly inside a building. I have, in my professional life, dealt with data where this has happened, where you can see somebody who has been carefully capturing a track, and then they've moved into a section where they are near a cliff, and all of a sudden the track jumps 2 kilometres sideways into a river, and then jumps back once they're clear of the cliff. And that's all about time.
Indeed. Yes, our lives are governed by these spooky timekeeping pieces, so how about that?
That one, as you can probably tell from the burbling we've been doing, that's pretty cool. I would personally have to do a bunch of reading on history, but I strongly suspect that picking up a few random Bernard Cornwall books and a few random whoever the hell wrote the Master and Commander, Patrick something?
Her.
Whoever wrote the Master and Commander series books would probably see me in good stead.
And if you're very keen on tall ships and magic flying around, the Games Workshop Manowar game, though I think they buried it several times so it wasn't making much money, that's pretty good for that.
Was Warhammer Naval Combat,
yep.
As I recall?
Yep, and it had one of the lowest model counts and, you know, smallest outlays, but you know, still hundreds of dollars. But
I think you've established why they don't sell it much anymore.
Indeed. That wasn't hard.
If you can't sell 500 models, what's the point?
Yeah, but it was a pretty good game. It was this tall ship combat and, you know, various kinds of craziness with the various factions coming through that. And, you know, magic.
I will specifically mention this one to Gulo T. I mean, as far as system, I've been on a bit of a Quags kick recently, so I would be tempted to go with that.
Depends entirely on the story you're trying to tell and the function players play within it, I think.
If you're trying to go with a ghost story, or...
Yeah, if it's a ghost story, if necromancy is just a thing you do.
Mm. Yes, it's almost whether you're playing Pirates of the Caribbean 1 or Pirates of the Caribbean 3.
I never go as far as 3, to be honest.
The amount of magic and stuff in the world kind of changed over the course of the movies, because in the first one, the fact that there are ghost pirates is this really big thing.
Right.
By the third one, you've got the actual Davy Jones. You've got all manner of stuff that people are just kind of accepting.
Right. So, they had a bit of escalation fatigue.
Indeed.
Yeah, that happens.
I think we've kicked that one around a fair bit, but that's kind of a fun idea. Cool. As I said, I will mention that to Gulo T.
Right. And now we have ideas coming from a new contributor. How did these arrive? Remind me.
These arrived by email quite recently from listener Alex, who I'm guessing is working their way through the backlog. Because, and I will just double check this, yes, we have an idea from Alex for Episode 5.
Wow. Shall I kick this one off?
You may as well.
Okay. This is for Bond Behind the Scenes, which was a classic episode, we could say that now, without fear of anyone remembering.
Indeed, yes. That dropped on the 11th of May, 2013.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, the good old days. Sorry, I always get a kick out of people who are going on, it's like, oh, back in the day, it was like, that was 3 years ago, man. You really need to reevaluate what back in the day meant. All right. So, Alex, ideas for Bond Behind the Scenes. What if you've got a film franchise that's been going on for so long and becomes such a cultural force that it has developed sentience? The people playing the roles start acting off-script or acting in character off-set because the roles are taking over. If you wanted to go more horror with this, you could do a Tyler Durden Fight Club scenario where the role is fighting for survival and or hiding its actions from the host. If you wanted to go more comedy, you could go with an LXG scenario with various franchises which have gone through multiple lead actors, Bond, Sherlock, Doctor Who, etc., have to team up to stop some evil force or save their franchises, Toy Story style. Alternatively, you could go with a franchise that has been left to rot and an attempt to survive seizes random people in the street, or have some minor connection to it, and forces them into roles that are no longer filled by real actors. Like that episode of Buffy where the ghost possessed people and made them reenact its death, except on a more large scale. Possibly with singing, or is that the other episode?
That's the other episode.
No idea for the system, beyond, of course, Fate or Quags, which can do anything. They can. They can do anything. Of course, if we combine them, they would be even more powerful, but would have a terrible name one way or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. No, that's cool. I like it. I would probably go for the comedy one, especially Quag style. And
yeah.
That's kind of awesome.
The Sherlock Holmes one kind of appeals to me, because you've got such a range. I mean, you've got...
Such a range of portrayals?
Yeah, you've got the Benedict Cumberbatch data processing alien life form approach to Sherlock Holmes. You've got the Johnny Lee Miller deeply flawed human being approach. There's the movie which I think is called Without a Clue, which is basically a Sherlock Holmes comedy, where the real brains of the operation is Watson.
There was the BBC series from the 80s, where this was a smug git, really.
Kev would hit me if I did not mention Basil the Great Mouse Detective.
Indeed, indeed. The Powder of Sympathy would come out for that one.
Hmm.
Yes, in fact, comparing the number of actors that have portrayed Sherlock Holmes and the number of actors that have portrayed James Bond, Sherlock Holmes had about 50 before James Bond started.
Yep.
A lot of these are way early black and white, but they don't get a look in because, you know, before television was invented, there were a long list of, and, you know, this was silent movie era, huge numbers of actors. It's just crazy playing yep. Sherlock Holmes. It's quite an impressive range.
Especially if we start bringing in audio, you know, sort of radio plays or stage plays, because they'll be out there.
But yes, the idea that there's this entity out in the zeitgeist trying to re-imprint itself in the world, it's quite moving pictures, actually, from Terry Pratchett.
Oh, yes!
It's the Hollywood, the movie magic pressing into the world.
Nice!
So definitely a hook up there. I'm split between the idea of doing like a Super Hulock fan crossover, that's a worry, with characters from multiple franchises banding together, which could be funny. It could be hilarious. Mm. I like the idea of saving their franchises Toy Story style.
I was trying to link it together and then suddenly realised that, particularly with the Sherlock Holmes and Doctor Who, because as was stated on the previous episode, I very much like Stephen Moffat's episode writing. I do not much like his series or his season arc writing.
So you're going to be overjoyed that he's in there till 2020 or something, I saw recently.
Really? Well.
It could get better, you never know. I think that was the thing I saw.
Yeah, a lot of the episodes that have been absolute standouts for me have been Stephen Moffat episodes. But I much preferred the Russell T Davies story arc approach. Personal choice. I was just thinking of, and the fact that Stephen Moffat is also one of the writers, one of the two writers, I believe, for the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock Holmes.
Hmm.
So I'm imagining a circumstance where you've got the two franchises with this cultural force, and so you've got a bunch of Doctors Who, I think that's right.
It's definitely the plural.
And a bunch of Sherlocks teaming up to interfere with things so that Stephen Moffat is taken off head writer or series writer, whatever the correct term is, for Doctor Who, in order to do more of Sherlock.
The idea of the characters interfering in the writer's life is kind of a Jasper Ford?
I think it's been done a lot.
Yeah, I've probably, you know, writers, those people.
Mm.
But yes, the idea that we must save our author, or just dragging them into uncomfortable and embarrassing situations would be pretty awesome.
I mean, I know Stephen King had a crack at it with the Dark Tower series towards the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Enough said on that one, apparently. Okay.
That's a little bit indulgent, Stephen. Let me back that up a bit.
He did not paint himself in a favourable light, which was quite entertaining. Mm. He put himself in there as a junkie.
Hmm.
A junkie writer. Which is a little bit ballsy.
Yeah, gotta respect that.
Indeed. Yeah, I definitely like the comedy version, though the franchise that has been left to rot has a certain fun. I mean, what leapt to mind immediately was something like Rom's Patrol Orion.
Hmm.
Sort of bizarre, well, actually not that bizarre, entirely serious German science fiction of the 60s?
Eerily, it came out just before Star Trek.
Yeah.
Not so long before Star Trek, it is obviously a ripoff. But just long enough before that you think, wow, that's eerie.
Parallel evolution.
Yep.
Does unfortunately happen. And yeah, something like that, or other forgotten shows. I was going to say The Tomorrow People, but they made a remake of that, didn't they?
Yeah, it may not have been good, but...
Oh, awkward.
Mm. But yes, actually, I think the challenge these days would be find something that someone hasn't tried to reboot.
Lost in Space, got a movie. Yeah, good point.
Mm.
Space 1999.
That was what I was thinking about, yeah.
Yeah.
It hasn't come back yet, but who knows?
So yes, that would actually be a good path if you're going with the franchise left to rot type scenario. That would be a good way of starting the game, is everybody deciding, okay, what's the show? Are we going with a real show? Are we making up a show?
Hmm.
It could get horrifyingly indulgent if people have their own personal favourites.
You could end up with a lot of headcanon being sprayed around.
Yes.
Bitter acrimony.
That too.
That could be hilarious. Though, if you want to go straight out comedy, choose or invent your franchise. Have the franchise characters and things come back in a desperate attempt to foil a reboot.
Nice.
Don't say it's a comeback. Just stop making this shit. That would be a fun convention game, having the original cast of Battlestar Galactica thing to prevent that first miniseries from being made.
Or the floating, ineffable entities that are the characters of Space 1999 discover that Uwe Boll has obtained the rights and is planning to do a reboot, and so possess people in a desperate attempt to stop him.
I'm sure you can come up with a sufficient motivation for your players in that one.
Yeah.
Cool.
Indeed, that's kind of fun, yes. But I am liking the comedy variant.
Yes. The commentary variant as well, some degree, I'm sure. Mm.
All right, there's another one from Alex. This one for I'm Still Here Treasure Planet, which I am just flicking through trying to find. Oh, okay. I stand corrected. I suspect that either Alex does not sleep, because this is from episode 34, I'm Still Here Treasure Planet.
Mm-hmm.
We have, for some reason, I ended up with The Hobbit in Space! You're at the end of a traditional D&D dungeon crawl in space, and as everyone's patting each other on the back, somebody goes, "Hey, where's Bob?" At which point you get a message from Bob saying, "I'm still here on the treasure planet." And now you have to go back through all the traps and general annoyingness to rescue Bob, who hit his head on the way out or something. For a more horrific bent to this, Bob could secretly be a puppet of the big bad end guy who was still around. And I just realised where I got this from the Byzantium episode of Doctor Who, where Bob got eaten by weeping angels. Facepalm.
Yep, that's pretty funny. That does kind of sound like a GM trolling the players for a bit of a comedy episode, but the idea that, yes, you could do it in a fantasy environment or anything. You're like, hooray, we're back from our glorious adventure. Wait a minute, the doppelganger alarm is going off.
Oh, shit. that's a nice one. Because I was thinking initially that, okay, that feels like a one-shot. But the that now makes that something you can drop into an existing game.
Hmm.
Because you can have an adventure, you can have Bob temporarily taken out of the picture.
Hmm.
You probably want to get the player's buy-in on this, though the nice thing is you could get the buy-in after the fact, and if they're okay with it, you then, as you say, set off the doppelganger alarm. Everybody becomes aware that Austin Powers' wife was in fact a fembot all along, for no readily explainable reason, and that means that the real person is still back there somewhere.
And maybe the changeling, the simulacrum, the doppelganger, whatever, its intent isn't like directly harmful to the players, and they just needed to get out somehow, and this was the best way to escape, and they need help. It's like, sorry, your friend's fine, but they're still stuck in this terrible place where we were stuck.
He's in stasis caused by warp spider venom, but he's still basically okay.
He'll keep.
I mean, he's not aging, put it that way.
So yes, if your co-conspirator player was also of the same sort of mind, like, yes, we kind of have to go back. We just went there. Why did you say something earlier? It didn't seem the time.
Yeah, I tried to, but there was never a good moment. That's kind of nice. From memory, Stargate Atlantis did something a little bit similar to this, where they killed off one of the characters, and then, I think, like a season later, find that same character a prisoner somewhere.
Hmm.
And it's a clone. I cannot remember which one was the clone, or quite how the process worked, but you know, they sort of bust into a room and somebody says, "Thank God you finally found me, what took you so long?"
That is trespassing on the my twin brother territory from soap operas, but sure.
Yeah. They handled it pretty well. It was quite nicely done.
Yeah, awesome.
I mean, the idea of the dungeon crawl in space has a certain amount of fun to it as well.
Mm.
If only because I dimly remember an article in Dragon magazine, which tells you roughly how old I am, from many years ago, pitching the idea of D&D in space. And effectively what they'd just done is taken the standard D&D races and added themed spacesuits. So dwarven spacesuits from memory had elaborate helmets with horns, and their space weaponry tended to have axe blades at the end of the barrel just in case you ran out of charge. That kind of thing.
This wasn't an April Fool's episode, perchance? They were pretty fond.
It was hard to tell. I mean, this is the magazine that published an entire mini-module about exploring Baba Yaga's hut.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yes. So that's a thing.
Hmm. It's a very particular sort of game you would be running there, but no, that's kind of the idea of that, hey, you get to recycle a dungeon. That's pretty cool. And, you know, maybe reposition it in the story rather than just being it's a place we knocked heads together until we got to the bottom of, we stole crap and left.
It would be a lot of fun if the players made modifications to the dungeon and the dungeon ecology on the way through.
It would be especially funny if on the way back they start to regret the levels that they flooded and the negative elemental energy they loosed in one section. Or
I am reminded of a game I heard about where the players were using the ever-full bottle of water, which had a geyser mode that you could use as a weapon, and the party got ambushed or attacked or routed, and they dropped the geyser but didn't actually switch it off. And so they go away and they regroup and they come to assault the dungeon, and meanwhile the GM, who was apparently a bit of a bastard with a calculator, had figured out flow rates and figured out the volume of the dungeon. And so they come back to this 10-level dungeon and find that the water is about halfway up level 7.
Which, on one hand, means that a certain percentage of the monsters are no longer alive. On the other hand...
Yeah, anything that can't move and can't breathe underwater, you've pretty much taken care of. On the other hand, you have moved the entire dungeon ecology up a few levels and caused some population pressure.
Mm.
And presumably that thing is connected to the elemental plane of water, so it's never going to stop.
And it's probably letting all sorts of interesting things through. And, you know, there's still undead and other exciting critters.
Yeah, that are just thinking, well, I'm dead, I'm animated, and now I'm underwater. Fucking brilliant, I've got barnacles.
Yes. That could be kind of a fun trick to pull on your players, provided you're not being complete dick about it. And the option that... I quite like the idea that, you know, aha, here we are back at the inn. Wait a minute, Fred's glowing. Why is... Oh, crap, we have to go back and save his people and get original Fred, flavor Fred back.
Yeah. God, the fucking damn. Yes. Yes, I can see... I am aware that I have patterns, and generation and colony ship is one of mine, and you could have a lot of fun linking that in there. There was something that I pitched for an episode a while ago that I can't even remember what the prompt was, but it was essentially the idea of people going out there to try to make contact with these generation or sleeper ships that have been sent out before the development of faster-than-light travel, and effectively trying to make contact with and rescue and help these quite literally frozen relics of your own past, who are in the process of heading to solar systems that have either been inhabited for years, have been determined to be non-viable for reasons that weren't able to be picked up at the time, possibly are inhabited by aliens who aren't going to react overly well to a bunch of primates arriving, this kind of thing. And you can drop this basic idea into any game with a lot of travel in it. You can drop this sucker into, which is kind of fun.
Also reminds me of my trips to Sumac. I forgot the milk. And brought a doppelganger back.
I hate it when that happens. I mean, often the doppelganger is just yogurt that's in the same basic Tetra Pak configuration, but it's still irritating.
Indeed.
Yes, once you've made a cup of coffee with unsweetened yogurt in place of milk, that sticks with you, man. These scars. Changes you.
Let's not uncover any more trauma.
Okay.
Alex also had an interesting idea for Apollo Rising that mashed up Greek gods and succession struggles, all sorts of things. And yeah, neither of us are super comfortable at tackling that one because not having too much of a grounding. Oh, I've got a little bit of a grounding of that, but veer off into Milton at one point, and I think I might have to do some reading.
Yeah, I sort of looked at this one and thought, this is an interesting idea. I mean, it also links into US politics at one point.
Ooh, I didn't get that far down.
Second paragraph, second line.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's a valid comparison, actually.
My thinking on this one is, because we've got so much Greek mythology and links to other things, that I'm a computer science and geography guy. I don't know any of this, and Ben knows more, but is still not 100%.
I think we can have fun with this on another occasion with a few more folks.
Yeah, I think Kev would be a good addition to this one. He would be able to sort of talk about the parallels that Alex is making. And from my reading of it, there's some really interesting points in here, but I can't do them justice. I'm also going to talk to a couple of friends of mine who really know this sort of stuff and see whether they would be willing to talk about it. So we're going, I think, to save this one for a later episode, because it's an interesting idea, and it would be nice to do it justice. And I can't.
And we're run on, so we should wrap this puppy up.
Yeah, how are we doing?
Let these people get back to their regular programming.
Indeed. All right, that has been Ghosts in Overdrive, or possibly Ghosts in Overdrive plus Alex.
And thanks to Taz, Will, Just Dave, Burning, and Alex for their sterling contributions.
Indeed. Hopefully we've done entertaining things to your ideas. Hopefully we haven't done dreadful, dreadful things to your ideas. And we will see you next time.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Next time on the Big Red Couch.
Okay, so we have Snake Style versus Monkey Style from Will Myers.
Awesome.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!